Okay. Well, we're on this new cycle that started a couple sessions ago. What we're doing now is we're anticipating the RFP coming out, and we're leading up to it first with those types of things. We call them critical issues that you need to make a sustainable program. And within each critical issue, there are best practices. And the reason we do that are these follow the ranking criteria when they evaluate your proposal. So the idea being, as we go through these critical issues and the best practices to address each critical issue, we'll be prepared to just breeze through that RFP when it comes out. And I think that's a good segue. Right today, we're going to be talking about labor market assessments. Last time we talked about community assessments. And later we'll go into partnerships. Those are critical issues that build up how to build your program. And then we'll move into doing the program, which is actually easier than what we're talking about right now. But what we're talking about now is are things that take time to build, and you can do them before the RFP is out. So with that, why don't we move right into what's happening in Washington? Heather, any news from Washington?
So no real news from Washington. It looks like, as kind of everybody expects, there may be a delay with the RFP coming out just due to the shutdown, but they're still looking at sort of that spring time frame for it coming out. So maybe it might be shifted a little bit more towards March, April instead of February, March, like we were first thinking. But they'll keep us updated as things progress, and we'll keep you guys updated as well as we find more information. And then I just wanted to remind you guys on the HMTRI side of things, you know, we're always here to answer any questions you might have, any feedback you might want on some resources that you're looking for, different things like that. You know, please feel free to let us know. We're always happy to help. And don't forget that there's some amazing resources available on brownfields-toolbox.org. That's our website. Again, that's brownfields-toolbox.org. And there's lots of great things that you guys can use to help along the way as you are in the process of preparing for that RFP to come out.
And it looks like because of the shutdown, we were originally thinking it might be the February, March area. And now we're kind of looking at the March, early April area because of that shutdown, a little bit of a slide. And if we get it in later March, middle March, early April, if we look at the schedule of how the response would be for that, the RFPs would be due in May or early June. So if it comes out in, say, April 1st, it would be June 1st. If it comes out in March, middle of March, it would be middle of May. So it's 60 days you have to actually write the grant, get it ready, and submit it at grants.gov. Once that goes in, they need 60, sometimes longer. They'll probably try to push it, but 60 to 90 days. So they'll be doing evaluations, which will take till July or August. This is a lot different than every other year that this has been done because of the budget process, and they're doing some reorganizing of the whole program. So they would be doing their evaluations during the summer. And by August, the awards should be, we should know who was awarded funds, and might slip into September, so that August, September. After that, it really won't affect the programs too much because once the awards are given, then you sit down with your regional coordinator and you work out your work plans and everything that's in your grant. You pretty much say, okay, is this the way it's going to be? How are your budget numbers correct? And you kind of lock down what your grant and how you're going to progress with your program. So that'll be happening in September. Then the authorization to spend funds where you could start writing checks is after October 1st. So that'll be the new federal fiscal year after October 1st. So that part of our scheduling hasn't changed too much. If you get the money and start writing checks in the beginning of October, your first cohort might be in the winter, say, of 2019, next winter. with an anticipated graduation of the spring of 2020. So you want to catch that first hiring push that usually occurs in northern climates in the early part. Those in the south, it really doesn't make as much difference. But those up north, there's a big hiring season that starts in April, May for the anticipated push in spring. So the back half of this doesn't look like it's going to change too much. Front half may change a little bit. So that's pretty much the schedule. We're going to, as we zero in on this, we'll let you know as we know more. Of course, until the RFP comes out, we don't know how many people will receive grants or the total amount. It's usually been about $3 million a year, 16 or so grants. It could be more this year, depending on how their budgeting works and what they intend to, how they intend to structure the program. The RFP will probably look fairly similar to the old ones. There are a few changes we talked about in the past. You're going to be able to charge indirect costs of 5%, a little 5% bonus you'll have. And we'll talk about the grantsmanship and that later date. But that's pretty much what this program is going to look like. What we have now is an opportunity to do the program development work. This is kind of the things that take time. And there, I know there is a tendency of, let's not start working on this until the grant's out. But I think that might be a mistake if you wait on this particular grant, because there are several things that need to be done. And I mentioned them early in the call, which includes trying to determine where you're going to be doing your program, working in tandem with that and the employers that might be in that area, hiring your students, and then developing your partnerships. And those are hard to do in 30 days. They take longer. And the way we like to approach these projects is to go at this as if you're going to get the award and start building your partnerships, building your relationships. And I would caveat everything by saying this is what we're planning on doing. We're going to go after this grant. We should know by the summer, late summer, if we get the money, and we're planning on training next winter and placing students the next spring. And we need your help as part of this in writing this grant and getting things together. It's conditional. We're not sure if we're going to do it. We're going to try for it. If we don't get it, we'll probably try again. I'll regroup. But we need to get this first step to get to the second step, because this grant is a lot different than many academic grants where it's there. You write it. You could write it without leaving the office. You put it down, and you don't need a lot of interaction with other people. This one, it's almost the opposite. You have to interact with a lot of people and get your ducks lined up and pretty much have your whole program laid out before you even get funded. So that's the approach we're using in these calls, and we're going to go through this. We're going to be pretty much with you every 2 weeks till we're well on the way on these grants, and we'll be doing also a webinar, and as will EPA. They'll be doing a webinar on the RFP, the strict interpretation of that, where we could ask questions of EPA on how to respond to the grant. We're going to be looking more at techniques and grantsmanship and how to write that grant to give you the best opportunity to get funded. Before I get into the weeds here, as far as labor market assessment, and I'll put all these in the notes. If you're not getting, you may be getting reminders from Heather. If for some reason you don't get the notes by Friday, just contact Heather and we'll put you on the PLC list also. We usually put everyone on two lists, a general list and then a PLC-specific list. In these notes, there'll be, I just want to remind everyone of the EJ Small Grants Program. We've had grantees that have been able to use this program to sustain themselves and to do more local projects. They're $30,000 grants, and they're going to give out about 50 of them, and they're due on March 8th. So when you look at the notes, you might check that out and go to the website. There's going to be also be a webinar about them. They were originally due about this time, but they, because of the shutdown, they extended the grant application to March 8th, and that's doable. You can look at the RFP on that, and you might want to submit a grant and see there. It's not directly associated with environmental workforce training, but it does have an education component and working in underserved communities. And it might be something that would be nice to tandem with an environmental workforce development job training program. We did get a question, and this popped up occasionally. We're a new program. This is a question I've been asked. We're a new program, and how do we compete? You've talked about people being in this program for many years, 5 or 10 years, or as long as actually 20 years in some cases. How do we compete with these people? Do we have a chance to compete with someone who's been doing this for 5, 8 years? And I want to answer that, because the question is, your chances are excellent. And I'll tell you why. The EPA has recognized this issue. In fact, originally, when they formed the program, they were going to only allow one cycle, people to only do one grant award, and then they would move on. And the whole philosophy is we need to share the space and give everyone a chance. The arguments against that is it takes a while to build a program, and sometimes you can't always become sustainable. It may take a little while. And some of the programs are just so good that they decided to evaluate these proposals, but have a design the RFP so it's a level playing field. And what I'm saying here is to make this work for everyone. Usually you'll see about half of the grants go to existing grantees or alumni, people who have had grants. They dropped out of the program for a while. They've come back. And about half new ones. So, and you ask the question, well, how do you do that? Because people that are new may not have the depth of an experience of training in environmental workforce. Well, there's several other factors they use that are in there. When you read the RFP carefully, there's special factors that they consider. They're highly dependent on partnerships and your ability to partner, your ability to leverage, and also on related experience. You may not have a lot of experience in environmental and workforce training. And Auberl's an excellent example. You all have this great social enterprise working with underserved populations, people who may be homeless, have drug addiction issues, and they put together a winning proposal. And the reason they did is they wrote a good proposal with good partnerships, leveraging. They had special factors involved in that. So what I'm saying is I would not be intimidated if you're new, and I would just go after it as it's a new grant. And those of you who have been doing it for a while, I would probably issue a word of warning, because it's a higher bar when you need to be re-upped. They're going to look at your quarterly reports. They're going to and they always say at our annual meetings, don't take your old grant and regurgitate it. They're looking for something new, expanded partnerships, expanded leveraging. And so if you take your, and you could say, well, we've been doing a good job. Well, you're going to be doing a good job, but others are also doing a very good job. And they may have included a larger part of the community, or they may have demonstrated in their grant that they're working with their employers very closely. So I would say there is a challenge for those who are going to be re-upped. And this year, many people are going to be, everyone is eligible to get re-upped, or if they've had a grant in the past, they can re-up for a grant. We don't know how many grants they're going to be giving out, so I can't say what are your chances. If we get a feel for that, usually it's about 1 in 4. will get funded, but that could vary depending on how the money is allocated, what the appropriations are, and how many grants they give out. So for everyone, whether you're an alumni who hasn't been funded for a while, whether you're going for the re-up, or and everyone's eligible this year, or you're brand new, I would just go after this grant as if it's a grant and you're going to go for it. But again, and we'll talk about this at a later time, it's going to be very important to focus on new partnerships, good partnerships, new leveraging, really good leveraging, solid leveraging, working with other people, seeking out special factors. And those we talked about last time in determining what your target group is. But it's the big thing that we do know is it's highly dependent on not on things that you could write in an office, but maybe more important on outreach. And I would say these things we're talking about now in terms of developing your grant are maybe more important than actually doing the training. For those of you who have never done training and say, well, we're not experienced job trainers in environmental technology. Well, people bring those people on as subgrantees or as contractors. You might work with a local community college or you might work with consultants. In many years, as we watch these programs, I tend to go to the my thinking tends to go towards the least difficult issue is actually doing the training. The most difficult is all the peripheral things, working with partners, developing partners, finding out how to leverage, how to interact with your employers. And that's where we're going to go today. We're going to be talking about labor market assessments and best practices. We talked last week about community assessments. Find out what your community might look like that you want to work in. Now we're going to talk about labor market assessments. When we look at labor market assessments, we have to consider all these other issues. We have to consider, and when it comes down to it, employing our graduates is the whole reason the program exists. So without anything that will kill a program faster is not being able to place a graduate. Anything that will give program managers an ulcer more is to get in their program and now they start thinking, where am I going to place these people? What am I going to do? And contrast that with doing a really good labor market assessment, doing your homework now and having it almost locked down of where your students are going to go and that they're wanted by people in your community. And that's what we want to talk about in the minutes we have left. The trick on doing a good labor market assessment is drilling down from general to specific. And, you know, for grant's sake, for answering a few questions of grant, you can do the general. You can go, and we talked about going to the Office of Economic Development last time. You could go there and they'll give you information on new people moving in the neighborhood, and they could give you information about what brownfields are in the community and a lot of nice statistical information. And that's fine. And you could write that in the grant, but that doesn't really mean anything in terms of placing your graduates. You've got to have the mindset of, I've got graduates now, even though you haven't even started your program. Who's going to hire them? And what skills and knowledge and certificates are they going to need to get the job? You don't want to start your program and have a killer, say, asbestos and lead training certificate, and it's a new community, and there's no need for that. There's no demand for that. On a converse to that, that may be the one thing that your community needs is lead and asbestos because you're in a very old part of Massachusetts that has everything is painted with lead. So you want to start looking at that. What does the market look like? And that's going to cover a lot of areas. And what we want to do, as I said, you want to drill down from general to specific. It will guide your curriculum in terms of what you'll be training. And we're going to be talking about curriculum later. That's easy. It'll drive your recruitment. And that's not so difficult either. It'll give you an idea of what kind of people you need to hire. For example, as we talk about we've talked about with limitless vistas. If you've got a major employer who needs people, but they can't hire someone with a felony or a criminal record, as callous as it sounds, you can't recruit people with felonies. You may be in an area where, excuse me, we'd like to keep open mic so you can break in and say something.
That's okay.
No. We like to say this is a program for underserved people, veterans, people with criminal records. It's a program for underserved. And if you can, you recruit based on that. If you're in an employer desert, I call them employer deserts, just like a food desert, if you have no one in the community that will hire the type of people that you want to recruit, it goes back to what we talked about last week. You've got to find a new target group. What's more important, your target group or finding employers that will hire your people? It does no good to train underserved populations and then they get out and they can't get a job. Now, the inverse of what I just said also holds true. You could be in communities where the employers are looking for not only underserved people, but people who have had issues with the legal system. We have many in the construction area that the people that own the companies actually have been there, done that, been there, and they're really encouraging people who may have had problems when they were younger or are getting out of prison, and they need a second chance, and they make excellent workers. And you may find in your labor market assessment that you got some government organizations that may not be able to hire people with criminal records. You may find in that same labor market assessment people who are willing to do a pilot program or people who are welcoming them that. We have, of course, in many states, the second chance laws and the ability that you cannot discriminate on the early portions of interview someone who may have a criminal record. So all of these things take in consideration. But clearly, the labor market assessment is going to guide you on what your recruitment's like, just as much as it guides you on what curriculum you may be training, whether it's lead, asbestos, it may be something in deconstruction, it may be something in terms of working on and transportation issues on along highways. We had a situation in Florida one year where there weren't a lot of jobs in this particular target area, but the highway department said, we need everyone you can graduate to work along the highways. We've got hazardous issues with flaggers. We need flaggers, and it's fine if they have issues with the legal justice system. We just need a person with these certain certificates, and if you can train them, we can. There's a good chance we could hire them. So, what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that there's just so much that is involved in who your employers are going to be. And the question you're going to ask me is, okay, well, how do I find these employers? And again, I say go from general to specific. And there's lots of places to look. And I'm going to suggest some. Clearly, you've got local unions. I'll put these in the newsletter, and you probably know them already. Organized labor is an excellent place to look. And if you have a laborers union, you want to talk to the business manager and say, is there any interest in our graduates or potential graduates if we start a program that may have certificates for hazardous materials? 1910-120, everybody needs that. And if you can't go on a hazardous site without that, they might say, well, if you got graduates that have 1910-120, we can work with them. We perhaps do a pre-apprentice program, which many of our grantees have gotten into. You've got government organizations. People would be surprised that whether it's a landfill or it's a incinerator or some sort of governmental organization, wastewater treatment plants, is an excellent opportunity to hire people. related to government is working, not directly working for the government, but working with government agencies. And the cleverest thing is, of course, those of you who were at the all grantee meeting a couple of years ago, Rochester, New York, where the project officer worked with the Department of Purchasing and was very clever in finding out who were the remediators working in Rochester, who was doing the deconstruction. This also occurred in Detroit several years ago. It was a serendipitous thing where the project officer was roaming the halls, was associated with city government, and went into a meeting with contractors, vendors, and it was about all the deconstruction that was going on in Detroit. And the big complaint at the meeting was, well, we can't find qualified people. We need these certs. We need lead and asbestos, or we need 1910-120. And, of course, this is a gold mine. The project officer could hardly stay contained. We have them. We will have them. Are you willing to partner with us? And again, one thing that spooks everyone is the RFP, they say, try to get commitments to hire people. Well, in this economy, it's tough to get a commitment to hire people. I suggest you say we get commitments to look at our people, not necessarily hire them, because they don't know what they're business outlook's going to look like a year from now. They don't know what problems could have. Unforeseen things happen. During the California fires or Katrina or Sandy, we had the opposite problem. We'll take everyone that you can give us that has 1910-120. We don't even care if they've graduated yet. We need them. So that's the opposite of that. So, but what you want to do is find out who the key employers are in your community. You're essentially developing a Rolodex before your grant even starts. You want to find out who are going to be the go-to people. Manpower firms, and we're going to talk a little bit about how those can work with your graduates, manufacturing plants, construction and deconstruction. Demolition companies are excellent sources. We've placed graduates in just about all of these fields, transportation fields, scrap. In fact, we have a grantee, Recycle Force, and their main job is to deconstruct computers and recycle them. And their objective is they hire people to go to work for a Recycle Force. They train them and give them certifications that let them move up the ladder in terms of the organization. It's a public-private partnership. So there might be pest control, for example. We had someone from Office of Chemical Safety that said, gee, just about anyone could go into business if he has the certs and licenses to do pest control. So there's just a whole lot of them. In fact, the problem is more, there's so many different occupations that range from scrap to pest control to transportation, construction and deconstruction, to actual training in terms of analysis and assessment and other forms of cleanup, flaggers that move trucks around and direct people to avoid hazardous materials. There are so many of them. The trick is finding out who may be your best employers that you can go to at a later date. And again, how do I go specifically find these people? Well, you know, there's always the yellow books and the yellow pages, but, you know, today we've got tools that are really phenomenal. In fact, this morning, just for the heck of it, I went to Google and I said, environmental technicians in North Carolina, where I live. And all kinds of things popped up. And not only did it pop up, it led me to another site called Indeed. And Indeed, you put in, the neat thing about Indeed is it'll give you the companies who've got job openings. And we're not talking about, and if you go to some of these higher end manpower firms, they're looking for doctors or engineers or someone with a lot of experience. I was impressed that they were looking for entry-level technicians, people that would work in the field. They had people, the types of people that we graduate, ones with certifications. And you can click on a particular employer. There must have been 20 different employers. You could click on employer and they'll tell you the type of people they're looking for and what kind of skills they're looking for. Many, many technicians. And as I'm looking at it, though, I'm thinking, not so much that I want to use the site, but I want those employers' names and I want to contact them. And there must have been, I would say, a dozen firms that are looking for technicians. They're often, some are remediation firms, some are other manpower firms, and they're companies like Aero, or some are national in scope, some are you could tell they're more local type firms, cleanup, first responders, this type of thing. And if you identify those firms, you can go to them directly. And you could ask them the questions that I posed earlier. We're thinking of developing a program. We're going to have people that will have 5 certifications, including 1910-120, perhaps asbestos, lead. Would this be of interest to you? Would you be interested in looking at our graduates? And they'd probably likely, in all likelihood, heck yes, we'll be happy to do that. If you get that kind of response, you want to drill down to the next level. Judging on what your conversations are like. Would you like to help us with this project? Would you like to be on our advisory board? Would you like to participate in the program? So you keep going down and you want to find out you're going from this general to more of a one-on-one interview of the person. What kind of certs are most valuable to you? And it might not be this, they may refer you to someone else. What kind of certs are you looking for? What kind of qualifications? What kind of work experience that are you looking for? Are you hindered if a person has a legal issue or a criminal background? Or if they do, what kind? They might say, everything's fine except, you know, we can't take anyone that has a violent crime, or we will take everybody. We can work with them. Or, you know, everyone that, as long as they don't have a felony, or it depends on the type of work they're doing. They may be fine. That's fine. We're working with a variety of people, and we could assign them jobs that would fit if there are restrictions. So again, what I'm talking about is going general, specific. What kind of wages are you talking about? What I'm discussing here is a labor market assessment. And you might tell me, it sounds to me like you're doing a placement service. Well, I am. But I don't want to wait till my graduates are a month away from graduation to have my ducks in line. I want to be able to go into this program before I even start. And he's telling me, well, I'll take everyone with 1910-120, or I'll take everyone. We're doing a lot of asbestos work, and that's our specialty. They got to have lead and asbestos, or they have to have confined space because we're doing a lot of trenching. So you may decide we're going to make sure that these are in our curriculum. This person, if he's really looking for people and serious, he will go on your advisory committee and guide your program. Because when you think about it, we've heard numbers from $3,000 to $5,000 worth of certifications. You're saving him a whole lot of money. You're basically training everything and giving him a trained, certified employee that he doesn't have to put additional investment into. So he may be very happy to work with you. Now, the people that are saying, oh, I need one or two, that's more challenging. You're really best off when you can find those who will hire 5 or 10 or 20 or all you can produce. And getting back to Rochester, what he did was get with City Hall and had all the vendors that worked in the Rochester area and said, we're going to be developing a program. Would you be interested in committing to look at our graduates? And they actually went around the room. I'll look at 5, or I'll look at 4, I'll look at 3. He basically booked out his entire graduating class before they were even close. So this is just an anecdotal response to what you can be doing. And again, what we're doing now, before the RFP is even out, we're getting our ducks in a line. Okay. Now you're going to ask, well, what if I don't get the grant? That's okay. Again, we preface this whole thing as we're developing this program. You may get an incredible response and say you don't get the grant. You might be able to go to City Hall or county government or a philanthropic organization, or you may be a philanthropic organization or a nonprofit and say, we can get in. We don't need EPA right now. We'll go for the next round. We can get this thing started just from what we're finding, that there's this tremendous demand. The reverse of this, there is no demand. We're in an employer desert. There's nothing. There's no national contractors. You're either not looking hard enough, one, or two, you've got to go to these smaller niches where you're putting one or two at a time, or you've got to find the right occupation. You might get down to a flagger or a highway person. You may have to change the whole focus of your program, or you may decide, we're not ready for this. If we go here, anything worse than getting a grant is getting it and not being able to place your graduates. So that, again, you could see why. Let's do it now. With these conditional, well, this is what we're going to go for, build up your Rolodex. And, of course, one of the questions going to be asked of you in this RFP, have you involved your partners, which we'll talk about later, have you involved them in the grant writing process? And it's too late if you're already writing a grant, or it's due in 2 weeks to do that. But now, if you start working with the employers and talking to them and starting a dialogue, you know, you could always say, well, we didn't get the grant, but we're going to keep working on it, and maybe the next time around. Or they might say, well, we'll subsidize you, or we'll get you something started, or we're going to start it anyway. So I wouldn't be afraid of waiting till you get the money to start doing this and get this labor market assessment going. So, well, I've talked more than I should have, because we try to keep these down to 30 minutes. Does anyone have any observations or what they've done or found successful in terms of placing their students, or problems placing their students? Anyone out there?
This is Elizabeth up in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. We did have problems. We developed our curriculum specifically for entry-level positions to train them for that. I don't know if it's just because of the job market right now, but we've had a lot of difficulty in placing people, because they're still looking for people with four-year degrees, two-year degrees, you know, more training than is actually required for the position. But, you know, they're able to fill positions with higher-level people, I guess,
right,
or higher, more highly trained people.
Yeah, and that, back in the past, we tried partnering with Brownfield News and some of these, and we actually worked with them on a job board, and everyone was an engineer or a project manager or a BA degree or whatever. And I think we came to the conclusion we're looking in the wrong places, that we're kind of, that when you say environmental technician, you're really maybe a little higher than you need to be. It's almost like entry level environmental position or environmental worker or remediation worker, but I understand what you're saying. We're really at the level of, we need someone that has 19, 10, 120. Once they get into the organization, they work their way up, but they've got to get in there. And you're right, many of these people don't have experience.
Right, and that's the other thing too, without the experience. And I mean, it's for lots of people, that's always the issue. How do I get experience without getting a job? But
yeah. An interesting thing I heard from a grantee was there, many grantees use extensive use of manpower firms. I don't know if you've tried those. You'd have to find one that works primarily in environmental. They serve two purposes, and this is something I'd never heard of before. To some extent, they indemnify the workers. So they may be hired by the manpower firm, and then they're sent on job assignments, and the manpower firm is, of course, in kind of indemnifying that worker. So while he might not be able to get a job with the company because he's had a criminal issue, he may be able to get the job with the manpower firm. And many grantees have found that to work. But I know what you're saying. You start looking, and if you look to a lot of the job placement firms for a fee, that's all you're going to end up with. You know, you've got to, but try that putting in the, even, as I said, Google. Just, I was amazed. I don't know if it's something that's new with Google, but put in environmental technicians in Pennsylvania, or even entry-level environmental positions in Pennsylvania, and see if that helps. The big thing is your graduates have 1910-120, which is the money certificate. And any time you go on a hazardous waste site, you have to have that certificate.
Mm-hmm.
But you brought up a good point, and I'm sure panic set in when an emplacement started and you had to...
it took a while. I started placement in April and everybody was placed, but it took till December. So I did do it, but it was hard.
It's hard. And the longer you go, the more you stretch into other occupations. As I said, mm-hmm. in Florida, they went to highway workers. They stumbled around until they ended up with DOT that said, we need people with this cert and to work on our highway system. Maybe we're doing a lot. So, and the other thing that came out last year, I don't think we had talked about it before last year, flaggers. And they said, if you've got a brownfield or a superfund or something, they need people that are, and they actually had they had a cert for flaggers. And these are people who direct traffic around a waste site. And it could be tricky. And you just presented a good argument for having re-ups. Sometimes it takes a cycle or two to figure out that the hardest time to place is that first cycle, because you don't have your Rolodex and you don't have that proven track record. You know, often the more mature grantees, they get one person and they say, he was dynamite. I'll take some more. You know, that, and if you're the first time, it's a tougher sell. It's a little tougher. Any other questions or observations? I know all of you have grappled with different issues. We're in a time now where hopefully the employment market is improving. And of course, natural disasters it puts a spike in the program. I mean, again, 1921-20, if you've got refineries or fires and you've got hazardous materials, it's important that they know where you're at. We have this employee finder that I've talked about, and Bruce takes care of that, and we've got links to it. It's on the Brownfields Toolbox, and it talks about all the different programs and what certs those programs have, and the idea of that is to get that in the hands of employers who might all of a sudden, or manpower firm, that says, I need 35 people. I don't have them, and I've already signed the contract to do a cleanup, and they'll start scanning, where can I get them? You know, where can I get them? So, I hope you all can survive the weather we've had, and we're going to talk next time about developing these partnerships. Again, what we're doing are those things on developing your program to make it a lot easier once this RFP comes out. If you have any questions between now and then, just send them to Heather. And Heather, do you want to give your email just so that everyone has that?
Absolutely. It's hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu.
Great. Any questions or anything you might have, or even of EPA, just send them to her. Well, thank you, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a good couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you.